Welcome to Her Leading Story, a podcast that will inspire you with stories from amazing female leaders and give you some ideas to help you design a life and a career that's perfect for you. It's totally doable, and the good news is that you'll have me and our community of leading women by your side every single step of the way. Let's get started. I'm your host, Julie Artis, and this is Her Leading Story. Hey there. Welcome back to this week's episode of Her Leading Story. I'm really excited to share with you another coaching call. In this coaching call, I am working with a client that I've worked with for a while, and she agreed to come on to the podcast confidentially, of course, because she actually just got two promotions. I'll let her talk a little bit about that. But her situation is a little bit different than the person that I coached in January. This is someone who is at mid-career, has just gotten a big promotion, and is trying to navigate everything that's now on her plate, the transition itself, like how she delegates some of her work that she had previously, and then how she's going to step effectively into this new role. So I hope you enjoy this behind the scenes coaching session where we talk about a lot of different things: time management, how to set and prioritize goals, how to make sure she's carving out time for her family, even though she's taken on this new responsibility at work. So enjoy. Thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast this week. I thought we might start by you just telling the audience a little bit about a little general details about where you are at in your career and maybe what has happened recently and what you're excited about and or struggling with.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for inviting me. It's this fun opportunity. So yeah, as I've worked with you over the last year to figure out how I could find a better fit for myself within my current company. I was feeling at a crossroads and wasn't sure if I wanted to find a new opportunity outside of my company, either within the industry or even a bigger shift. And you helped me figure out that the company I work for is actually well aligned with what I want to do and my values. And so it was worth at least starting there and figuring out a new role here could be a good fit for me. I worked over about a year in fits and starts trying to create what that meant. And finally, about 6 months ago, got this new role of focusing on growth for the company. And so that's a totally new role that I shaped, at least the idea of. And so now I feel like I need to shape the reality of it.
Yeah.
Because it was my brainchild, and one of the things that I really wanted was for it to feel different and not just like snap in back into the same day to day that I had been doing.
Yeah.
And then in the meantime, this other role came up as well, which is overlapping the role I created. And so it kind of made sense for me to take that on. So now I'm taking on two roles and two new roles, but the second new role is actually closer to the old role. So it's maybe pulling me back into like less of a distinct shift, but I'm trying to figure out now, how do I really make it so that it is different and that I am feeling confident and comfortable in what my new role is, feeling valuable to the company and like making it like what I really hope is that in a year, people look at this, especially the new role I created, and think, oh, that was really needed.
Yeah.
We did really need that. And it really helps to have somebody taking on that responsibility.
Great. Okay, first off, and I know we've worked on this a little bit, let's celebrate the fact that you basically, let's just start there, right? Like, you worked really hard and really leaned into a lot of uncomfortable conversations to actually have the conversations about creating this new role, the first thing that we did together, right? I mean, and so you made that happen by spending time figuring out what you saw as a gap. And the gap had to do with coordinated growth for the company. And you were able to communicate that to people at senior levels, and they went for it. And then we should still celebrate, even though I know it's like a little bit difficult because you're just now starting this and it feels a little overwhelming. The fact that they also then were like, oh, hey, it makes sense for you to just take on this other big role too. So what I like to say is like, you got two promotions in the space of 6 months.
Yeah.
But I know at one point you said it didn't really feel that way. Why was that?
I think part of it was that I didn't want to admit that I wasn't already at that level. So I didn't want to admit that I had to be promoted to get this role. It was more that like I looked at it as me taking on different responsibilities, but not jumping up a level. But I can see it both ways. I can argue it both ways. I think the company is presenting it as a promotion or two promotions. So I should take that.
Yes, you should. I mean, I think you should really lean into celebrating the fact that a year and a half ago or whatever, you were really unsure about your future at this particular place. And it was through some hard work on your part and some reflection and hard conversations that you were able to like take small steps to make a somewhat significant pivot in your career, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud to have been a small part of that, because my mission, as you know, is just to like help women get into more positions of power and get promotions and get paid more money. And I think the world would be a better place. And so anyway, congratulations. I'm psyched for you. But now let's talk a little bit about the current struggle. So one of the things you said in the run up to this is that the newest role that you have taken on feels a little bit like what you were trying to get away from in terms of the job responsibilities. Does that mean it's a little bit further away from some of the like growth innovation you were thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be. They are overlapping. So the growth role is the one I created, and then the other one is a national version of what I was doing locally.
Okay, that's helpful. Yeah.
But at the same time, doing that nationally is still, while it's closer to the work I had been doing, it is still different, or should be, I think, and I can create it how I want to. That's the other benefit of the unique good position that I'm in, is that I do have a lot of autonomy to make this what I want it to be. But it's what I saw myself pivoting towards with the growth role was really more of a shift towards the business side of things. I am like pulled to that. And so this is more on back on the technical side, projects, which isn't bad, but it's like not what I envisioned 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But there is, I think, still a business side of that too, that I can lean into, that is about organizing us across the company and helping support those local leaders in the roles that they're playing at their level. And so it can still be more operational, which is what I was hoping to get towards.
Yeah. Well, I think the idea that you said in terms of scale is really important, right? Because I don't want you to frame this as like, oh, I'm still stuck back in the thing that I was doing a year ago. You could frame it instead as like, I'm mentoring or supporting, helping to organize people who are in the role that I was in a year ago across the country.
Yeah.
Which is totally different work than actually being in the role.
Yeah, that's true.
So where are you at with the creating of this, or what would be most helpful for us to talk through over the next 40 minutes or so?
I don't expect you to have the answers, but help me think through how to find the answers of what I've been thinking about a lot is, how do I create like an actual shift in my day-to-day? And sometimes it's forced upon me because I'm asked different things or asked to sit in different meetings or whatever. But more often, my day is for me to decide how I spend my time. That's maybe not entirely true since I'm on meetings from 8 to 9 or 8 to 5. But, you know, sometimes like I get to the end of the week and I'm like, oh, I did not do anything towards that national role or towards the growth role. I just felt like I was pulled in a different direction. And sure, I'm supporting people or I'm answering questions that are asked of me because I'm in these roles, but not,
yeah,
I'm not like in control, I guess, of what I want to create.
Okay. So is it because are a lot of the meetings that you're in now, people are adding you to meetings because you have this new title?
Not necessarily. I've had a crazy schedule for a while.
Yeah.
So some of it's projects, some of it's new stuff. And if it's the time that I have open, they're just people saying, oh, hey, I wanted to grab you on this or I grab you on that. So just my time fills up. Like I often will look at my week and I think, oh, I have a really light week. And then by Wednesday, I'm like, why did I think that?
Now, is your company culture that like you guys share Outlook calendars or similar and then people can just put a meeting on?
Put meetings on my calendar.
Yeah. Okay. So
one of the things that I've been thinking about and just wanted to finish this thought is,
yeah,
you know, that also often like translates to then I feel like at the end of the week, I didn't get done what I wanted to get done. And so spending time outside of work hours doing work or not even like spending too many extra hours doing it, but the mental energy of it being on my shoulders. And so I do want more of work-life balance so I can have time outside of work that feels like it's mine. But I think that actually the key to that is like figuring out my work balance so that I feel fulfilled at the end of a 40-hour week and I don't feel like I need to be time on the weekend.
Or that, in other words, like it sounds like a lot of times now what's going on with your energy is that even if you're not actually working, you're like worried about the fact that you didn't move the needle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the worst, right? Because then it's like you can't really be present or really relax.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like you almost have the time on the weekend, but you don't really have it because your brain is still working on this other problem. Okay. So, I mean, I have a couple of thoughts. And these are themes I think that we have discussed before, but this is a new level, new devil, right? I think this will be good for you to really lean into taking ownership of your time at work and really getting clear on what meetings you need to be in and what meetings you don't. Because like you just said, if you have open time on your calendar, people are going to take it. And so I think what's happening is you're also setting up yourself in terms of not a great expectation. You're going into the week thinking you're going to have time, but you're ending the week not having moved the needle. And that's horribly defeating, right? Because you're just constantly setting up this expectation for yourself and then it's never being met. So in terms of taking concrete steps towards meeting that, I think the first thing to do is in your case, just knowing you, the main thing to think about is taking a very small piece of your calendar and claiming ownership of it. So, and I mean as little as 2 hours a week during business hours. And that's because I know this is not something that you feel totally comfortable with yet in terms of, you know, because I was going to say, well, why don't you just look at all your appointments on Friday afternoon? And then lock the entire week so that nobody can make appointments unless they do it a week ahead.
Which I do. And they know that. And so they'll message me and be like, is this a real meeting or can I take this time? And of course, I never say it's real. I need that time to myself. I say, go ahead and take the time. And so they schedule over my blocked out time.
Okay. So that's, well, then maybe that's
just,
yes. Well, but I mean, I think you need to stop giving permission for that all the time. So
but I think your strategy of blocking it off and like starting small is probably going to be more successful for me than trying to block out an hour.
Right. And say no to everybody for the whole, because it's also a culture change, or at least people who work with you and know you, because you are still at the same place. You are working with a lot of the same people and they know how you work. Right. Of course, they're going to email you. Right.
And because that's what I want in my new role also is to be the support to other people. So that's the stuff I gravitate towards. But it does come at an expense of moving the needle on those other things.
Right. And I think what we're really talking about here at a kind of more macro level in terms of leadership is shifting from being reactive to being proactive. And so if you could make an appointment with yourself that was a non-negotiable, or two appointments of 1 hour during business hours each week, in which, I don't know, like you lock them, you call them sacred, you like...
I do sometimes put private on them.
Right. Yeah. Whatever signal you need to give, and give yourself that tiny barrier so that you know that you're going to have plenty of other availability if people need it. And so what you could do then is if somebody says, hey, I really need to talk to you, is that a real appointment? You can say, that is an appointment that I cannot change, but I have this other time where I have fake appointments or whatever. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I think it's really going to be important. So I'm really happy that you're happy with the idea, or you feel like it might be doable. Do you think it's doable to set aside 2 hours?
I do. I think that the other struggle I run into is not other people claiming my time, but me not being realistic about the like stuff that comes up that I have to do. So for instance, I did block out 1.5 hours this morning to work on a project that I need to work on. I had also been trying to connect with this woman since Wednesday and hadn't connected with her. So instead I called her, and I knew that that meant my 1.5 hours was shot, because that conversation was 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But I had to do it. So it's me not being realistic about how much my like day to day takes
and
when to find time for that, or just figuring out when is the right time to block out those 1.5 hour chunks or 1 hour chunks when I'm not going to have something more pressing pulling on my time. And I don't know if that's even possible, because it might not be predictable.
What about, I mean, let's think about the rhythm of your week. So for example, if this were me and my job, I would try to block time earlier in the week instead of later, like just as a strategy, because things are always going to come up during the week that are going to need to be cleaned up. So it makes total sense to me, because we are recording this on a Friday, that you were like, this is the one time that I can get a hold of this woman.
Yeah.
And I really need to talk to her. But if maybe you were able to block time on Monday, depending on what your meetings are, Tuesday, you might be able to protect it a little bit more, because the urgency factor of the end of the week approaching isn't there yet. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It makes total sense.
Is that going to be possible for you? I don't know what your standing meetings look like.
Yeah, I think that's possible.
Okay.
I mean, especially like my calendar's not filled up even for next week yet. It just fills up during the week. So if I fill it up myself today for the next month, those like small chunks, then
yeah,
definitely carve that out.
Now, in terms of what you're going to work on during that time, I'm assuming 2 hours might not be enough, but it will get you moving. Does that feel good? Or are you still a little worried about having high expectations and not meeting them?
No, I think that does feel good, because sometimes it's just getting it started.
Yeah.
And I think some of the work that I do throughout the week, either like with other people or other meetings that I'm in, they're already moving the needle forward, but I'm not as organized as I want to be before those.
Which makes even more sense why Monday, like I used to have a thing, it's probably still blocked on my Outlook, because a colleague I worked with years ago put it on, which is like 1.5 hours of like weekly prep, just like prepping for the week, what's going on. So it was like 9 to 10:30 or whatever. And I think if you could manage to do something like that, where you're actively looking at the week, knowing you're going to get interrupted, knowing meetings are going to get moved and all that, but spending a little bit of that carved out time, knowing and preparing for what's coming, you'll feel so much better and on top of things.
Yeah, I think that's true. I keep having conversations with like our local leaders who are trying to project their workload for the next month or 3 months, and they all do it differently. And I've been wanting to have one system so that I can see what's going on across the company. And so these different local leaders are saying, here's what I've done, and what do you recommend? And I'm like, I'm going to give you a template, but I like keep just saying that. Like, I'm working on a template, but I'm not actually working on the template. I haven't found the time to do it. I want to do that. So yeah, like, and it doesn't even have to be perfect. If I could spend an hour just like focusing on it.
Yeah.
Getting it started. And as long as I get it started and then get feedback and we can perfect it later. Yeah.
Then that would be one thing off of the list of things that you need that dedicated time for. So maybe that's what you should strategize for Monday or Tuesday, is setting aside an hour, like maybe a half an hour to look at your week, other things you need to prep for, and an hour for getting a rough draft of that template out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would help me immensely.
Yeah, I think it would too. I think just taking those little, I mean, I want to refocus it, because I think it's also the fact that you're, like when we were corresponding about doing this recording, you were like, so big, the work-life balance. And these concepts can feel so big that we get trapped and stuck in the big. And that's why I think it's really important to drill down to the micro, like what tiny thing can I do? And you'll realize that, oh, actually, I do need that hour, because that is part of what I need to be doing for my people, or my company culture, or deliverables for the senior management, or whatever it is. And I think setting aside that time is critical. I mean, it's not dissimilar from, I mean, I know, you know, I'm a faculty member, and one of the programs I did and am involved in, we talk about writing, how there's never enough time for faculty to write because we're pulled in all these different directions. And so one of the things that we talk about is writing 30 minutes every day and just setting that aside in your calendar. And it's really, really hard to convince participants that that's going to add up to anything, because they're like, 30 minutes a day? No, I just need to block out a whole day, because I need like time to think and like all of that. And I think there are times when you have to like, you know, push and you need a lot of time, concentrated time, but it's better to be in a routine habit, like on a regular basis, of pushing those little things forward, because things are going to happen. Your kid's going to get sick. There's going to be a crisis. Like, it never ends. And if you like are constantly pushing it off and not setting aside the time, you'll never get ahead and you'll never feel that freedom on the weekends.
Yeah.
So
one of the things that I did start doing just like a week or so ago was, I have a digital to-do list that I've never, like, I'm not great at. I typically keep my to-do list in my head, which is another, I think.
Okay, yeah, like, we need to talk about that too.
And so one thing I've started to do is structure that to-do list based on, like, the national role. What are those mm-hmm. to-dos? And the growth role, what are those to-dos? So that I can try to focus when I do have time, or just, like, sometimes it's not, I don't need a lot of time. I just need to, like, remember that that's one thing I wanted to check off my list.
Yeah, I think when I still do this actually in my role now, that's also more administrative, is that for my task list, I like how you're dividing them into like the different roles. I think that's really important, because this is a transition time. So you're going to, it'll eventually become natural. But at the moment, you're like checking in with yourself. Oh, I have a new position. What am I supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
But if you have a list and you're sort of regularly checking it enough, I mean, that's the thing with to-do lists. You actually have to look at them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That's the other problem. And then the other thing that I did that I think really helped was, if I had to-dos for administrative work of any sort, I broke them out by, like, I need to write a report, so I need to have an hour. So I would call them administrative long tasks, like I would need an hour. But for a lot of things, it's like, I need to write this email, like I need to respond to that, I need to, and some of those make it to the task list, and some of them are just sitting in an email, and I don't want to write them again on my task list. I just want to like plow through a bunch of stuff that might take 2 to 5 minutes each, right? And so I called those administrative short, and I would just go through those one at a time. And because I had a list, a comprehensive list, even if it was just like, respond to email X or whatever, approve person's hour. I mean, like, it could be anything that are just those little things. I found that to be really useful because then the longer things were things that I would need to do where I would have to block time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And those could be what you're working on, like in your hours, your 2 hours.
Like that.
How is the digital to-do list working for you?
I've been better about it recently. I think my struggle with it is that, there's some stuff that it just, I just know I need to do, and I it doesn't save me time to put it on the to-do list because it takes just the same amount of time to just do it.
Yeah.
So then I end up not putting it on the to-do list and it just sticks in my head until I do it, or sometimes I forget about it. I'm not great with my to-do list, but I've been trying to focus more this week in particular about just check it at the end of the day. And often I haven't done the to-dos that I said I was going to do that day, but then I can remind myself and figure out when am I going to do it, or like what isn't as important. And then sometimes I do often have, okay, there's 2 things I want to get done by the end of the day. And then sometimes I'll check my to-do list and realize I didn't do them, and I'll try to buckle down and do one, get it off my plate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think getting into that practice is really important. Like the end of the day habit is really good. I also wonder if, I don't know if you'd have time for this because I don't know what your Fridays look like, but one of the other things that I know my colleagues have had good luck with is like doing a sweep at the end of the week, like on Friday afternoon, of like, oh, here's all this stuff that I meant to do, didn't get done, got interrupted, couldn't finish, and take whatever time you have, 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, to do the things that are quick and easy and fast, right? That are going to take less than, like, things you don't want to put on the list.
Right.
Right. Like, you just want to do them, right? If it's less than 2 or 3 minutes, just do it, right? And get all those off, but then have a comprehensive list at the end of the week so that you're, I'm just thinking about the weekend. And if there's some way that, like, to take it, like, you don't have to, like, hold things in your brain over the weekend. And if that would free you up, like, energetically and sort of mentally for the weekend. So that might be something to experiment with too, is like, okay, I'm just going to do a sweep of my week, clean up my to-do list, clean up those little things that are floating around in my head. And if you don't, if they're floating around in your head still, put down one word for them, like at least have a placeholder. Cause I do think there is this, for those of us that tend to carry to-do lists in our head, it's an energetic toll. And the more complex your job becomes, and yours just has become more complex, the more systems you need to have in place to make sure that you're not trying to hold it all up here.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I do think I could do that. I mean, often I do feel like I'm trying to get to the end of Friday and fill out my timesheet before my family is expecting me to sign off and spend time with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe I just need to figure out that it's 1 p.m. on Friday that I'm doing that and not 3 p.m. or 4 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, this is like something for you to experiment with, which is, does having a list that I know I'm going to hop into next week and that it's comprehensive, does that give me, like, does that really free me up to be present for my family on the weekends or to go Christmas shopping or take a weekend drive or whatever the case may be, as opposed to having those linger. So I would think a little bit about that as a tactic as well. The other thing I was going to ask about those, like the to-dos that you were talking about that are on there and you're kind of at the end of the day going through them. One of the things that I think you might also need to think about getting comfortable with is that some of them might just not get done because they're not a priority.
Oh, yeah. I'm there. I'm comfortable with
okay. Okay, good. I was just like, I want to make sure she's not like trying to be perfect and do everything.
I don't hold that kind of weight on my shoulders that I need to do everything. It's more so that I sometimes will like build up a task in my head that, just like you're writing colleagues, like, I think it's going to have to take more than a half hour or more than 15 minutes or whatever it is. But then I sit down and do it and it doesn't, or I make progress in 15 minutes at least. Mm-hmm. And so I just need to get over that feeling of this task is daunting and I can't start it yet. I think
that
would help me.
That's super common to have like avoidance / resistance. And then it stays. Does it then sometimes stay on the list for like multiple weeks?
Yeah. Or like, you know, sometimes I'm forced to do something. Like yesterday I had a meeting that I was hoping to prepare for a little bit and I didn't have time. And so like 10 minutes before the meeting, I left a different meeting early so I could at least do something. And mm-hmm. then something turned out to be enough. And I was like, oh, why was I thinking I needed to spend an hour preparing for this meeting? I just needed to like do a couple things, write a couple things down. And it's not finished yet, but the meeting was like a kickoff meeting. So it doesn't need to be finished. Just needed to have a tiny bit mm-hmm. of thought put into it.
Yeah. I think that's important to recognize, which is to say that sometimes having 10 minutes is enough to just get something started, even if it seems like it's going to take an hour, which is kind of what I like about this idea of you having the like block time at the beginning of the week, because you may in fact find that that template that you're planning to write, it only takes a half an hour, yeah. at least for draft one. And then you're like, what am I going to do with all my extra time
yeah.
that I've protected? I'm sure you'll find something.
Right.
But I also love that you left the meeting early.
That was an inconsequential meeting. So I was like, my time is better spent prepping for this next one.
And this is, you're just going to have to do that.
For
because of like the two new roles and the like sort of level at which you're starting to work, because there's just going to be too much to fit in.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to start to be ruthless about fitting it in.
Yeah.
You seem like ruthless. No, you don't.
Yeah. I mean, I've back to the other point of thinking it's going to take more than it takes. I've definitely been told once or twice that I overthink things. So I think.
Yes.
I anticipate overthinking it.
because if you're overthinking, then it like needs 8 versions before it sees any
yes.
the light of day.
Yeah. And it's going to yeah. take me 2 hours. But if I don't right. overthink it, it takes me 10 minutes.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think, but it's also good that you're feeling confident that, I mean, this is also, I'll give another analogy to the academy, which is teaching. And when you're teaching a class and you have to plan it and plan all the exercises and what you're lecturing on, all the assignments and all this, when you're a new instructor, it just takes an enormous amount of time and energy to prep a new class and everything. But it's also the case. So it does take a lot of time. It gets better after you've taught it 2 or 3 times, right? And you kind of figure it out. But the other piece is that teaching will take up the time
that you give it.
That you give it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so one of the things that's really important for new faculty is to like really figure out like, how can I prepare enough, but not over prepare, which is exactly what you're talking about in these meetings, right? You want to prepare just enough, because if you'd given yourself an hour, you might have just taken all of that hour up with this and you wouldn't have needed to.
Yeah. And it's not getting to a better product at the end of the day. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there's, well, it's like that thing of diminishing returns, right? Like you have to put in some time on it, but at some point, like each additional hour that you spend, it's like a logarithmic scale. And I know you know what I'm talking about, yeah. where, you know, like the first hour or two of prep for a class is really important. And each additional one after that has, I don't know if it's diminishing returns, but it's very minimal returns.
Yeah.
And so I think, like nerding out together, because I know your background, I think that's it's like really thinking about that kind of a curve in terms of time can be really useful, just knowing that some minimal time works.
Yeah.
Also, if you need more time, just getting started keeps your brain in the game, you know?
And I think probably helps to right size the task. Like before I get started on it, I might build it up as something that's going to take me 2 hours. And frankly, sometimes I get started and I'm like, oh, this is going to take.
This will take me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you need to know that. And so too often I don't do that initial starting point because I put it off till when I think I have enough time. But just as often it is going to take longer. And then I'm in a bind or doing that work at 9 o'clock at night. Because I hadn't set enough time aside.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because, so what you're saying or what I'm hearing you say is that you have two different kind of propensities with these tasks, right? One is to overthink it and think that it's going to take 2 hours and then really 10 minutes, 15 minutes is sufficient. And then in other cases, you think, oh, this is going to take 2 hours and then it actually needs five once you get going.
Yeah, that's more the case like when I have to review something staff has prepared. I might think, oh, it's a final document. I'll just read it and find the text edits. And then I start it and I'm like, oh.
Oh, no, this needs to be restructured.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's good. Like, so what you're saying to me is that's you kind of have a sense of which ones you tend to.
Yeah, definitely.
Overthink and which ones might need more than 2 hours. So I think that's good because then, I mean, in both cases, having those 2 hours of block time mean that either you're going to plow through a bunch of things that you're overthinking, or you'll at least get started on something that you'll have to probably spread out over maybe 2 weeks or something, and maybe work an hour in the evening or something like that, as opposed to doing it all in the evening, right?
Yeah.
All right.
I think it kind of comes back to just like setting aside that time in the beginning of the week, so that I can really take control over the rest of my week, whatever that means. You know, whether it's I knock stuff off so I can have more time for things that come up, or I need to structure or I need to set aside time to do the tasks that I've discovered are going to take longer.
That's right. And if you like spend just 20 minutes looking at what you have on your plate, like you'll know, you know, and then it's about trying to figure out where to fit them in, like what to like get off the plate that can feel really good. But then also like, maybe do you need more like an hour or two to try to block off later in the week and protect that?
Yeah.
But I think this is just like you're at the beginning. And so I would just, this is experimenting with what works for you in the new role and taking small steps, the blocking off the time at the beginning of the week, maybe cleaning up your list late on Fridays to get them out of your brain, and trying to distinguish between those two kinds of tasks that you know you're overthinking, or you know you're underestimating, at least at the beginning of the week. And I just wonder if playing with those different kinds of tactics are going to make you feel like you have more control. Because, I mean, you know, control is an illusion. but it does help feel like, and again, I want you to feel a little bit more of a sense of being proactive rather than reactive, because I think that will help with you're confident that you're stepping fully into the roles, right?
Yeah.
And that you're doing what you want to be doing in them, because you do have pretty high standards of yourself and your own work and want to really give value back to where you work. It'll be interesting to see if just these like little shifts really give you that sense of being more proactive. And then you can decide if that's enough or if you need to be even more proactive. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it will certainly help. And I'm hopeful that that'll be the change that, because I don't feel like it's that I need like huge shifts in what I do, but sometimes I just feel like I need a little bit more focus or structure so that at the end of the week or the month or whatever, it's not like every week is going to be a banner week. I'm not expecting that, but I do want to make forward progress and see it, you know, make it a tangible progress and feel a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. Are you able to like measure that somehow? How will you know that it's been a successful month?
Yeah. That's a good, I actually just thought about that this morning, or I had that question
thought
pop in my head. What is success in these new roles? I think for some of, I do think that like for the national role, having new systems put in place would definitely make me feel accomplished. So that template that people can use on a...
So something that's more standardized across the offices.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can, like there are probably, there are different iterations of that. Some is it on workload planning needs a template, and the work we do needs templates. And I certainly don't need to create them all. I'm not going to create them all. Cause I'm not an expert in all of them anyway. You know, it's about just organizing it and making it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's some really tangible things on that role in particular that if I get those systems in place, I'll feel more accomplished.
Yeah, I think that's something to think about too for the other role as well. And I would set, and again, with the theme that we have going through this whole thing is like setting aside, like just tweaking, like doing things a little. I think maybe just taking stock at the end of the month for how you move the needle on setting up systems, for example, and just not downplaying them. Oh, I only did this template and started that other thing. Like being like, oh, I actually made progress on something that was proactive. It wasn't just me helping other people, it was me stepping into this role. And so I think having those like success monthly kind of check-ins with yourself, like, did I move the needle on the things that I know I need to be doing in this role, not what other people need for me, I think is the way to reflect on whether or not this is working for you and really making you feel good about what you're doing in your new jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that will be harder for the growth role that I created.
Made up.
I think that it gives me a good thing to think about, like, what does success mean, you know,
yeah,
on a smaller scale than like next year, people thinking, oh, this was helpful. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's like, well, what could I do for the growth role in the next month that yeah. would get me part, like a tiny step forward toward that? So almost like setting up monthly goals.
Yeah.
But again, I don't want you to like set up expectations and then be disappointed. So it's like, what little things?
Yeah. I'm not too worried about that. Like, I know that that's arbitrary. And if I don't accomplish it in December, I can accomplish it in January. It will help me focus. And because I think so often, I don't know if this is true elsewhere, but I assume it is. But definitely, I've seen it at my company. A title is bestowed upon somebody, but it's given no definition or expectation. And it's like, I don't want to just be called growth manager. And that's the end of it. I do want to make it into something that's real.
Yeah. I mean, which is just to bring it full circle, is like, this is what aligns with your values and the kind of contribution you want to make towards your company, right? And that you know that you have a unique point of view on this. You can see those pieces from a really good vantage point. And I get that you don't want the year to go by and for you not to have made some progress leaning into that and setting in place some systems or projects that will fully realize that. So I think that's smart. All right.
Thanks for all of your help over the past year and a half.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. I know everybody will gain a lot from this conversation, even if it's just time tactics management or breaking down big things into very little things. But I really appreciate you being on here and working with me. And I've been so happy to support you along the way.
It's been great.
We'll have to keep in touch.
Yeah.
I want to hear how this all goes in terms of your planning and your tactics, and maybe we'll check in again in a couple months.
Sounds great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Her Leading Story, where I was coaching this client about a variety of things around her transition to a more senior role in her organization. We talked a lot about learning how to delegate, but more so just prioritize, right? There's going to be more on her plate than she can actually do herself. And it's really, really important for her to figure out what matters, right? What matters for her, like the kind of work that she wants to do, the kind of days that she wants to have, but also trying to line that up as best as possible for the goals of the organization. And, you know, when you take on a more senior leadership role, as much as you might like to enjoy or meet with or mentor or talk to the people that you spoke with before, the people that you mentored before, that might not be something that's in your best interest anymore or what the organization really wants you to focus on. And so what we really talked about in this call was a lot of how to make scheduling changes in her week so that she was shifting more to the kind of work that she needs to do in this new, more senior role that she's taking on. We also talked a lot about carving out time for her family and making sure that work doesn't eat into personal time and how setting boundaries around this is super important and something that she's working on because she wants to make sure that she has time for her family. So you all know I'm not a huge fan of the term of, quote, work-life balance, because I think who we are is just like there is no separation, right? We have our careers and our lives and our families and everything is interdependent on each other, both sort of from a practical and financial standpoint, but also from just a time standpoint, an identity standpoint, especially if you're in a professional position. So at the same time, I think what's really important to learn how to do if your career is your primary identity and you're feeling burned out is how can I set better boundaries around my time so that I am taking care of myself and taking care of my family? Because ultimately, doing both of those things are going to make you a better person at work. It just is. But it's really hard because we're conditioned to just push through and keep working. So those are my two main takeaways from this coaching session. I hope you enjoyed listening in and I will see you next week. And that's a wrap on this episode of Her Leading Story. If you love this episode, please help me reach more women by leaving a review wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for being here and I'll see you next week.
This has been an Awkward Sage production.